Hey, Megan.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a little late.
Yeah, just a tad. It's 12:47 here at the Stateland and Cardinal Man's.
Yes. We're coming to you. I guess not quite live from right after the primary results have been coming in from California.
I for one look a little worse for the wear. I was at the Reason blogging event earlier. I got to be on blog at Reason TV as well, so it's been a big media day for me.
Right. Well, what's the lot of libertarians down there?
A lot of libertarians. A lot of and liberty.
Is there a consensus, liberty view of this race?
I think most of the libertarians kind of, I may be projecting, but I think that they lean towards Obama and the Democrats. And then there was actually kind of a split between there were a few McCain people, a few Romney people, and a lot of none of the above on the Republican side.
I mean, I would assume I guess there's been some sort of libertarian move away from Republicans in recent years, but John McCain, who looks to be in a dominant position after this step, he seems like the reverse of freedom to me.
Yeah, he kind of seems to me like, I actually blogged this today, that he really sort of seems to believe in the military model and of top-down control, and his real problem seems to be, like, the right people aren't running things. It's got nothing to do with devolving power down and emergent order and all the other things that libertarians love, so he's not well-loved in the libertarian camp, as far as I can tell.
Right, I mean, it's interesting, because he does best among you see at the exit polls in the states, more moderate Republican voters who, you normally think of as maybe more in that tradition, low taxes, but not all the gay bashing stuff. But he clearly has a real, streak. I mean, he's very into the military, very into sort of military models for things. Justin Logan had a post on the Cato blog about McCain's sort of effusing about some AmeriCorps program where the great thing about it is that young people wear uniforms and do group calisthenics together.
Just like we do at the Atlantic.
No, yeah. Exactly. I never quite understood what AmeriCorps was for, and now I guess I see it. You see those city year people running around our neighborhood sometimes.
Do you? I'm either not up that early, or I'm already down at the office.
They have these orange windbreakers, and I don't know. I hope they're helping people.
Well, I think McCain is better on sort of two issues that are dear to the hearts of libertarians: trade and immigration. But the general fear of his instincts on sort of everything else, from foreign policy to things like McCain-Feingold, have pretty much crushed any nascent affection that I can detect anyway. Certainly,
right.
I can't really claim to be the voice of libertarianism, given that
seem
to be getting read out of the movement every sort of other day, as I say.
Well, I just thought as long as you were at their party, then you could share a broader insight. I've been interested, though, in how immigration's played out, that for a while it looked like that was going to doom John McCain among Republicans, but he's doing fine, despite the haters. Then on the Democratic side, Obama really sort of went to Clinton's left on this stuff to try to win Hispanic votes.
Which seems to have worked.
Well, does it? I mean, he seems to have gotten hammered in California.
By the Latino and the Asian vote, right?
Right. But I mean, Obama, like, he won the endorsement of LA's Spanish language paper because he'd come out very strongly in favor of, the idea that undocumented should be able to get driver's licenses, that kind of thing. And so a certain segment of Hispanic elites, appreciated that. But it doesn't seem to actually have that much power with the voters.
What's your take on why he does so badly among Latinos and Asians?
With the Asians, provides an interesting twist. I mean, there's so few Asians, you don't really get a ton of polling of them done. Mm-hmm. With Hispanics,
Do you think about the Latvians?
Well, right. with Hispanics, I've been a little skeptical of all these racial animosity theories, just because I thought you might see the same pattern that you see with white voters, which is that more upscale people, like Obama, and more downscale people, like Clinton, but within the Hispanic population, it's much more heavily weighted toward the downscale.
That was certainly the argument of a Latino campaign person that I saw on television today. Because he said that among Latinos, you see the college-educated going more heavily for Obama, just like you do among white voters. It's just that because there's so many immigrants and first-generation people, they tend to be weighted towards lower-skilled workers.
Yes, my two Mexican-American young college-educated friends are both Obama supporters, just as young male college-educated Democrats all across the board tend to be. That's just a relatively small proportion.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where I barely know anyone who isn't voting for Obama in D.C., which may just speak to the circle I run in, or circles.
There's a huge Pauline Kael problem here, which... And normally one virtue of actually living in Washington is that you get to avoid that to some extent.
Right.
Because unlike other big cities, there you see lots and lots of Republicans around town here because, you know, they're in the government and stuff. But, you know, there's very, very little in the way of a white working class population in this city. You see highly educated white people and then black people of all stripes. And those are all... Obama constituencies.
Right.
So, you know, you can fall into this trap of thinking that, well, you know, nobody's voting for her, even though you know perfectly well that she's been leading in the polls all along.
Yeah, I think the other weird thing about this time around, and I mean, one of the things I really do like about living in D.C. now that I've been here for just about a year, is that in New York, I didn't know any Republicans. I didn't know any conservatives. I basically knew, I knew a few, but really few. You know, they're sort of like those people holed up in the mountains in Idaho with their canned goods and guns. And in D.C., the nice thing about D.C. is that no one here operates under the same assumption that they do in New York, which is that we all agree about all of these issues. And not only do we all agree, but we all agree that anyone who disagrees with us is just evil and disgusting. And there's, you know... Despite the fact that so many people here are involved in politics, they're a lot more respectful about arguments, and they're a lot more serious about it than people are in New York, I think. But the weird thing about being here this year is that the conservatives that I meet, anyway, are all so demoralized. And none of them that I can find is really excited about either candidate. Whereas, you know, you get people who are excited about both Clinton and Obama, and the Republicans are just kind of like, oh, well, I guess he's not so bad.
I'm a little surprised that, I mean, I know some conservatives hate John McCain, but I'm a little surprised that other ones aren't more excited about him, just because absent John McCain, the Republican Party really looks fucked at the moment. But John McCain is super popular. He could totally win.
But he's not really that popular with conservatives, right? He's sort of popular with, independents.
Right.
And, I mean, clearly he does okay among primary voters, but I get the feeling that almost everyone wishes that they were voting for someone else. They just don't know who that someone else would be.
Oh, sure. No, I just mean, given the dire objective situation facing the Republican Party at the moment, this seems like the best possible time to, you know, compromise a little and go with a guy who, you know, independents like, who gets great press, who could conceivably win. Because, I mean, right now the Republicans are looking at a combination of having been in office for a long time, what looks like a bad economic situation, continuing war. You would think, and in fact the polls show, that with anyone other than McCain, they're facing, you know, certain doom. But McCain is even or ahead.
I think they're just not that motivated. I think they will be, in the same way that Democrats weren't that motivated in 2000. Like, things were basically good. And, I think give Republicans 4 years of a Democrat, and they'll be back in fighting form, defending the hell out of whoever comes up. But I just think, at this point, they feel so betrayed that it's kind of like they've just gotten out of a really bad relationship, and it's been 8 years... And they were living together, and, you know, they're just not ready yet.
Right. No, I actually don't really understand when immigration became such a litmus test, just insofar as, I mean, George W. Bush has always been the sort of a pro-immigration Republican, and Ronald Reagan enacted just the sort of amnesty legislation, you know, that McCain is now being damned for doing. So I don't even know when this era of orthodoxy that McCain is departing from is supposed to have taken place.
Well, I think that, you know, in the last 8 years, you've got, I think it's just the combination of, we have, I mean, immigration actually allegedly peaked in 2000, but we have, because there's a stock as well as a flow, we have more immigrants than we've had basically since the 20s at this point.
Right, it's a lot.
It's a lot, and you also have stagnating middle-class wages and, you know, those two things, labor market competition, and people who feel precarious, they look for reasons, and immigrants are sort of a convenient reason, even though immigration doesn't seem, I mean, the effects of immigration, if they exist at all, are really pretty small, and they're pretty limited to a subset of low-skilled workers. They're not that broad. And they're certainly not the reason that it's no longer as lucrative as it used to be like an accounts payable clerk.
Right. I mean, that's what's interesting about it is that the backlash against immigration is much less sort of socioeconomically constrained than the actual negative impacts. Which, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the research shows that it's pretty much limited to high school dropouts, right?
Yeah, and not even all high school dropouts.
Right.
So.
And so that's, I mean, there's a certain abstract argument to be made that maybe we should all be concerned about the well-being of the very least skilled people among us. But, you know, the polls suggest that the volume of concern from this comes from a quite broad spectrum of non-elite people, most of whom seem to actually benefit from the lower wages and so forth.
My theory is that it's just that there's been a lot of economic change,
right?
And yet the one thing that isn't changing is we don't see a big increase in median wages. And I actually think that's a little deceptive because I think what's happening is that people are consuming an enormous amount of their wage increases in fringe benefits that are harder to see, like leisure time and healthcare. So they don't perceive that they're getting these big wage boosts, even though they are. But that aside, so they feel like the one thing that isn't changing is that their salaries don't seem like they're going up that fast relative to what they used to be.
Right.
And yet there's a lot of other sorts of economic change, competitive pressure, and there's also social change. And you know, the people who come into my comments, I mean, I think they're morally wrong in the sense that given that my ancestors got to come here when standards were looser, and you know, that a lot of people didn't want them there because the filthy Irish,
sure,
you know, they all drink and live tend to a basement, and they're shiftless, and everyone knows they'll never be able to assimilate because they're Catholic.
Right.
That given that my ancestors were allowed in, I sort of have this, like, pay-it-forward feeling about it. But they say something that's kind of hard for urban people like you and me to feel emotionally, which is that I have this, but that I think is a real thing that sort of you have to validly listen to. This part of their experience is that they say, look, I had this neighborhood and it was like this, my town was like this, and now all of a sudden there are whole parts of my town where I wooed my childhood sweetheart, and now none of the signs are in English. And it's all different, and I didn't want it to be different. I liked it the way it was.
Right.
And so I think it just ended up getting, in the last 8 to 10 years, it's ended up getting wrapped into a whole big sort of ugly package that, and I mean, the nice thing is that the drug war seems to have kind of gone away as an issue, right? Now it's all immigration.
yes, well, but wait, we need to tie this back to the election. So
yes.
And the point is that notwithstanding this backlash, John McCain, Captain Amnesty, as I've heard him referred on talk radio, or even Juan McCain, he's winning anyway, right? I mean, I saw some dudes on television trying to say, well, we got a real race on the Republican side, three contenders, but it just doesn't seem conceivable that either of them could catch him. I mean, Huckabee can't win outside the South, but Romney can't right. win in the South. And so how are you going to stop McCain? Right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess my question is, when do they drop out? You know, how much longer are McCain and Huckabee going to hold on? Because I don't see any real future for them at this point. I mean, Huckabee is kind of cute, and he's sort of right. scrappy, and you kind of admire him for... But he can't win outside the South, and it's really clear at this point that there's no possible way he can get enough population to get enough delegates to win this thing. And, like, are they staying in... After Super Tuesday, how long do you think it'll take them to drop out?
I mean, they're both in a weird position in terms of dropping out, because normally people drop out because they can't raise the money to keep right. paying their staff. But Huckabee has never had any money, and Mitt Romney is just spending his own money. So, in theory, neither of them really need to get out of it. Particularly Huckabee, right? I mean, Huckabee's in the limelight, building an audience in a way he never was before. So mm-hmm. it almost seems like, you know, whatever it is he wants to do next, whether it's try to stay active in Republican politics, as our colleague Ross thinks he can, or, you know, I don't know, even just sell more diet books, that, you know, it's to his advantage to just stay getting free television coverage. How much more of his fortune Romney wants to burn through on this is hard to say. But, you know, on the other hand, once you get the level of wealth that Romney has, it
How
seems
big
like
is
you,
his fortune?
I mean, you might as well waste it on... I'm not sure exactly how big it is. It's several hundred million.
Yeah, at that point, you know, the marginal utility of a dollar is so little that you might as well use it, you know, change it into singles and use it to replace the Kleenex.
Well, because I mean, obviously, this is something he's wanted to do. I mean, he had a good life as a rich guy before he became governor of Massachusetts, and that's what he wanted to do. And then he wanted to reverse himself on a whole bunch of positions to try to become president. It seems to be more important to him than just hoarding more cash, especially because if he loses, I imagine he can always just go make some more money. Whatever. I mean, the skills he had, I'm not totally clear what the skills were, but whatever they were, he still has them.
Well, if you had listened to my podcast with our colleague Josh Green, you would know a little bit more about this.
I did, but it's still actually a little unclear to me. I don't know. Business, it seems murky.
Well, my question, I guess, is the part of the problem for Huckabee and McCain, right? Huckabee and Romney, rather, is that if they stay in, you know, if the first one to drop out ends up helping the other one, right? Because they're both competing for these socially conservative votes, or that's my sense, is that Huckabee hurts Romney more than he hurts McCain.
Although the data on that is a little bit unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, in a sense, right, I mean, what's preventing Romney from getting traction is that he can't unite, you know, all the conservatives around his banner, so instead they're going to Huckabee.
Right.
But what's not clear is Huckabee causing that, or is Huckabee staying viable because there's a segment of evangelical Protestants who just find Romney unacceptable.
Right.
Because after all, I mean, it was obvious going into today that if you really want to be serious about stopping John McCain, you have to vote for Mitt Romney. So it seems to me that, you know, people voting for Huckabee at this point probably don't have any illusions, and that they're trying to, you know, express the fact that they don't like either of those other guys. You know, possibly in Romney's case because of the Mormon thing.
Yeah, I it was amazing. I saw some woman on television. I think I already talked about this in Blogging Heads, but I'll bring it up again because it was
sure.
fascinating to me. There was this woman on television in South Carolina a couple weeks ago who was just saying, well, you know, I can't vote for Romney because I worship one Lord Jesus Christ, unlike Romney, and I just don't want a president like that in office. And it's like, where did you learn about Mormonism?
Well, they have a lot of unorthodox.
They certainly do, but one of their more orthodox views is Jesus Christ, pretty nifty.
Right. No, I mean, but you know, this not being a Christian myself, I'm always a little surprised by these things. I was over the weekend. I was at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. plane got delayed, and I was sort of grousing about this, and a woman next to me said, well, you know, this is life, you just gotta roll with the punches, Jesus has a plan, and you need to trust in him. And to me, the idea that Jesus' plan extended to... Well, the idea that Jesus had specifically intervened to delay my airplane didn't seem like something that was going to get me on board for the Jesus bandwagon. It seemed mean of him. But that's not the perspective that exists down there. So, you know, maybe Jesus will somehow deliver it to Mike Huckabee.
Well, I used to enjoy the Lubavitchers who would stop me, and I don't know why me, because I think if there's anyone who looks less Jewish in the city of New York, they would have to have much, much, much darker skin than I do, and even then it could be Sammy Davis Jr., and you never know.
Right.
Nonetheless, the Lubavitchers would stop me in the subway and ask me to reclaim my Jewish heritage,
right.
In order to, you know, because they believe that this will help bring the Messiah.
Right. You need to reclaim as many as possible.
Yes. And I wondered, actually, and I think I once asked one, I didn't get a very clear answer, what would happen if I reclaimed my non-existent Jewish heritage? Would that help
right.
bring the Messiah, or would it actually delay his coming?
I think it hurts. Lubavitchers picked me out of a crowd in Prague and correctly identified me as Jewish, so I was very impressed by that.
Well, I actually shocked all of my Jewish friends by, there was a quiz on Facebook a little while back, and I scored, it was, is this actor Jewish or not? And I got sent this by one of my friends who is Jewish, and I scored 10 out of 11 on this, and then all of a sudden all my other Facebook
friends...
Who
did you miss?
Oh God, who did I miss? I don't remember now, but all of my Jewish Facebook friends got really upset because they didn't score as well as me. And they were like, you know, we're supposed to have, one of my friends called it Judar.
Right, yes. I'm not sure about that, but in theory, wait, okay, stay on track. See, we're late. I apologize to the viewers. My mind is a little addled at this point.
Not least because of Barack's stunning loss in California.
Right, although that wasn't really surprising. It felt like a bummer to stay up late for the late results and then just get...
The results
expected,
that had been, yeah.
Right, the widely anticipated results. It's just a scheduling problem for Obama because, looked at objectively, you know, tonight's results are kind of ambiguous. So it's all about sort of spin and narrative. And California is so big and it goes last that we were all kind of there, up, waiting for California, and then he loses. So, you know, that's the first thing on your mind. But
yeah,
I do have Obama campaign spin at my disposal.
Oh, please, please share it with us.
So they know that they won more states than Clinton did. They also know that, you know, the general landscape of this race was tilted very much in Clinton's favor, and that in Connecticut they managed to sort of steal one from, mm-hmm. you know, from Clinton's base while holding the sort of the key Obama states. And also that the delegate match, which we won't know yet, but it looks like it'll be quite close after today. And we're about to move into a series of contests that's much more favorable to Obama. Like February 12th, there's Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. Before that, there's some small states that don't matter. Except that Obama showed a real dominance in these sort of states where nobody lives for some reason.
That was actually one of the surprising things. I was surprised to see that he did so well in places like South Dakota.
Right. North Dakota. It was
North Dakota.
Sorry. Right. So, okay. So my inquiries into this, we sort of pushed the mystery up to a higher order level. And the thing about these states, North Dakota, Minnesota, Kansas, they were holding caucuses. And you can see in those states and in Iowa from before that Obama's people seem to have just completely cracked the caucus code.
What is the caucus code?
Well, I don't know. And see, they're not sharing at the moment. But, you know, Obama's background is as a community organizer. He knows a lot of people who were doing that. He has an enormous amount of intensity of support that you can see in his fundraising. And it's evidently a real advantage to him. The other thing is that Obama has made up a ton of ground in the past week, week and a half. So in any caucus state, by definition, you don't have mail-in votes and, you know, that kind of thing, which plays much more in his favor.
Especially in California, where the absentee was really high, right?
Right. I mean, that does seem to have hurt him there and possibly elsewhere. The other thing is that, I mean, you have a general pattern in American politics where voting is less racially polarized in a place where there aren't any black people. Somewhat paradoxically, I mean, Obama does best when there's either a really huge black population, like in Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, or in these states where there are basically no black people, and race is then not really an issue in the sort of electoral coalitions. Whereas in a place like California, you see much more splits. Although there, he did okay with white people. The question of why Asians hate Barack Obama, I think, needs to be explored.
Well, I don't have any answer to that, so I'm going to actually move on to a different question.
All right.
Although I do like the notion of the cracking the Asian code. It sounds sort of like a really bad thriller.
I don't know. Maybe it's an excuse to make a trip, find some banh mi in Fairfax or something.
But I think this thing about momentum actually really matters. And one of the things that I think I've heard you say is that how this race gets covered in the media is actually going to make a lot of difference. So in California, does this get covered as, well, Obama made up a lot of ground, you know, do they cover it the way that the Obama campaign is spinning it, or do they cover this as like a blowout for Clinton?
Right.
And that itself is going to drive a lot of the momentum of the race in the next few weeks. How do you think this is going to go? Just given the coverage we saw tonight, do you have any sense?
I mean, it'll be a real kind of tussle. The television networks seem to be giving a relatively Clintonish interpretation.
Yes, I would say that as well.
Now, Noam Scheiber pointed out on the New Republic blog that one factor there is probably that they were sitting looking at these late afternoon exit polls, which appeared to show Obama drastically exceeding expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then what wound up happening was much more sort of what had been expected, two or three days ago.
And why? What changed after the afternoon exit polls? I mean, just...
Well, see, this is the thing. Nothing changed after the exit polls. They should have known that exit polls always undersample old voters and oversample young voters, because the people they hire to conduct the exit polls...
like to talk to other people like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a well-known problem with the exit polls, and it's why the television networks don't report the exit poll data directly. Mm-hmm. They need to wait and renormalize and so on and so forth. But it still impacts, you know, what they're thinking in their head. And so it created something of an illusion of an early evening Clinton comeback. But that may not affect the coverage over the longer haul so much, because, you know, starting tomorrow, I think everyone is going to be, you know, looking for more stories to write, and you're going to be looking for the delegate counts, which... You know, it looks like they'll be pretty even. Clinton's going to come away with an advantage, but the sort of back-of-the-envelope calculations, I've seen, and also the basic logic of the situation, I mean, it's unlikely she's going to open up a huge lead. Plus, you know, it's sort of in everyone's interest to have the fight play on.
So
everyone's but Hillary Clinton's.
So, we're both fairly self-interested here because we both sort of endorsed Obama, at least in my case, somewhat tentatively. But what do you think? Is he still alive? Can he still go and take it?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely can.
Is he likely to?
He's never been likely to. I mean, one problem with the demographics of this campaign is I think Obama's odds just keep getting overestimated by people. There are more white people than black people. There are more women than men in the Democratic Party. There are more
Than young people.
More old than young, more non-college than college, so on and so forth. Obama has a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of organization. He's shown a lot of ability in spots, to break out of those demographic categories, you know, to win Kansas, to win North Dakota. But, you know, it's tough. Clinton has the regulars. You know, and people forget that Obama was almost, I don't want to say invented, but he was like a gift to those people who never wanted Clinton to win the nomination, just mm-hmm. in that it's because he's black, he could take away what was supposed to be Clinton's impregnable obstacle to a challenge from the left. You know, so there he is, but...
I take it that you mean her impregnable obstacle was her second X chromosome?
Oh, no. I mean that it was thought early on that it would be impossible to challenge her from the left because she would get the support of black voters.
Got it.
Against a sort of typical hoity-toity anti-war reformer like Russ Feingold, say. So Obama sort of, you know, unites that style of Democratic politician with being an African-American and having a lot of roots in that community and that sort of political tradition. But, you know, it's still a tall order. Hillary Clinton's always been hard to beat. She's not, you know, and she's not making giant gaffes of the sort that, you know, make it possible to put her away. You know, I think to people who don't like her, it becomes incomprehensible that all these other people do like her. Mm-hmm. But it's undeniable that they do. You know, so she continues to have the advantage, but it's by no means done.
So what do you think, assume that Clinton and McCain are the nominee? What's the likelihood of a Democratic presidency then?
Hey.
Hey!
Our connection seems to have... got broken there, so with a minor production problem.
The miracle of modern telecommunications through the internet is not quite ready for prime time.
But hopefully the editing team will make this all work out. So we were saying, okay, if it's Clinton versus McCain,
what do you think the odds are?
It's a tough, hard fought race. The odds. I find it difficult to calculate the odds because I think who's going to win that race is going to depend on what happens with the economic situation. And because, you know, macroeconomic trends are so important to political outcomes, a lot of sort of political pundits seem to get in the habit of doing economic forecasting, as a kind of sideline. But I actually have no basis on which to judge whether or not, you know, this round of interest rate cuts is going to revive the economy in time for the election?
No, interest rate cuts usually take about, they take about 18 months to fully work.
Yeah, okay. Well, then the Republicans are doomed.
they start working through the economy faster, but in general,
right.
Monetary stimulus works better than fiscal. It works faster than fiscal stimulus,
right.
But I doubt it'll be fast enough. I mean, you're talking about producing a result by November.
Right.
I don't think you're gonna. You know, you might mitigate the downward fall, but you're definitely not, I think, gonna produce a turnaround by November.
Right. I think that's, you know, the feeling people's pain is not John McCain's forte. It's not good for the incumbent party to, you know, be in a recession.
Although, I mean, it's a little different, right? This is such a weird race.
Yeah.
Because John and McCain and George Bush are, like, enemies. And everyone, all the Republicans certainly remember that. And he's not trying to run on George Bush's economic coattails with the exception of the tax cuts, which are
right.
So long ago that you kind of can't really blame or credit them for anything that's happening.
I mean, it's not even that you particularly need voters to blame McCain. I mean, as long as voters are in a somewhat just sour mood about the whole thing, McCain just, unless he has some magical turnaround, just doesn't seem like the kind of politician who, you know, appeals to people looking for the government to help them out. He combines, you know, as conservatives do, just a sort of ideological opposition to, you know, handouts and whatever with a kind of evident lack of interest in the whole thing?
I don't know. I think that McCain actually appeals to a wide swath of voters who feel that, who are sort of disenchanted with politics as usual.
Right.
And Clinton, and that includes the economy, that includes, because, I mean, a lot of people lost ground under Clinton as well, right? The changes in productivity and wages and so forth, that's been going on for 30 years now. This is not something that just happened under the Bush administration. And to that extent...
Right, but there was this, I mean, this is not, like, something Bill Clinton did, but there was a big productivity boom.
Right,
during.
But the thing about the middle class not feeling like they were getting ahead terribly fast was also sort of a thing, like, or at least you can look at the statistics and say the same thing that's happened under Bush was basically happening at the same rate under Clinton, which is that the wages were stagnating. There's some difference in the after-tax distribution of it, but there's not actually like a big change in how there's a sort of change between. The poor are doing better. Poor are doing the very low skilled workers doing a little better, but the rest of the workers are doing, continuing to do badly under Bush. But they were doing badly under Clinton too. Their median wages weren't growing then either. They've basically been stagnant since 1970, depending on how you count. But and so McCain just comes along and says, like, well, the real problem is you just have the wrong, you've got these establishment politicians, the wrong people are running things. Let me fix it. And I think that may be, I don't know.
But this is the thing. I that would be more plausible if I'd ever heard John McCain say anything about 35 years of stagnating wages
or
whatever else. It just doesn't seem to be something something he's interested in. I mean,
right.
He gets really, really, really upset about the idea that some congressman somewhere has stuck some project into the bill because he thinks his constituents want to see him sticking projects into bills. And, he'll rant and rave about this and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, a certain kind of person, sort of thrills to that. And of course he's correct on the merits that, like, we shouldn't have stupid projects. But at the same time, the reason we have all those stupid projects is that, basically the way you win elections is by, promising to help people out in some kind of concrete ways, not by this sort of McCain-esque, appeal to a military ethos of shared sacrifice. On the other hand, I think if we're just talking about the war in Iraq, I think McCain matches up very well against Hillary Clinton. I think this idea that Hillary Clinton has the experience and toughness you need to stand up to the tough and experienced John McCain is silly. A national security election against John McCain for the Democrats has to be about something other than toughness and experience if they want to have any hope of winning.
There was a very funny comment on my blog today on the subject of John McCain and the way he runs on his military experience. It said, tough, sure. Brave, sure. Smart. Well, he must have good eyesight.
That's what you would want to say. In a rational world, experience as a pilot does not actually equal experience with the sort of policy judgments that a president makes. That's not the world we live in.
On the other hand, experience as a politician's wife might also not be the best training for that.
I just mean for anyone. It's just that, right.
But I think the main problem with politicians, they all have sort of resumes. Almost all of the people who are electable have resumes you kind of look at and say, well, so what your main skill is just sucking up to us. So few of them have held real jobs doing anything that required any sort of real deep expertise on anything that...
I think there's a reason why. I mean, you normally go to these governors who, they're kind of like mini presidents. You ran a state and then you get to point to, well, I had, signature initiatives X, Y, and Z. And then people listen to whether they sound like those are good things or not. That's not great, and it neglects a lot of what a president actually does, but it's sort of rough and ready. this business of having two senators run against each other is going to be slightly weird.
So, although, you know, I think this is an interesting race where it's exploded a lot of sort of the received wisdom I had. I mean, one of the pieces of received wisdom I had was that being the vice president is really a great slot to get into the presidency.
Right.
And then, you know, some people pointed out that, in fact, there aren't that many vice presidents who've ever made it to the presidency. And another one is that, you know, senators can't win, governors do well, and that's definitely, you know, Mitt Romney is not parlaying his, or Huckabee, neither of them has managed to parlay their incredible experience as governors into a presidential.
Well, except the wisdom was that senators don't do well in general elections. Obviously, lots of senators have won nomination, from John Kerry to, you know, Bob Dole in 96, happens all the time. You know, if it's senator versus senator, then a senator has to win.
Right, and that, I guess that's the, so maybe I take it back.
Well, except that, but I mean, it just does show, I mean, all of this sort of conventional wisdom about presidential elections here, your N is so tiny, that, so one thing happens, and now, you know, a senator will be elected president, and, you know, where's that conventional wisdom going to be after that?
Well, I think it's going to be a good time for pundits to get into the business of manufacturing some new conventional wisdom. So, the question is always, is it good for the journalists?
Right, and having been up so late, we have an edge on developing tomorrow's conventional wisdom.
Absolutely, tomorrow's conventional wisdom today.
Yes.
You know, only people with middle names with two syllables can win. You heard it here first.
Middle names with two syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay, should we leave it at that?
Yes.
Thank you for
chatting with me, and I'm sure I will see you at the office tomorrow, looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I think I'll be asleep. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.